Once again, I want to say thank you to Bree and Spiral for appearing on the show and helping me out there. And Josh's article is up. It was a Kotogane no Line Barrel. It's a review of Line Barrels of Iron. So check that out at anime3000.com. Next, I have the Reverse Thieves. And I just want to plug something for them. They are going to be on the Anablog Tourney at Twitter. So feel free to look for them there. You can also find them at www.reversethieves.com. And definitely check out what they're writing about there. So, without further ado, let's go.
Hisui! Quick! Gather everyone in the library! I know who the killer is!
But I've gathered everyone together, but I still can't figure it out! How did you solve the crime by just looking at one anime merchandise website?
Elementary, my dear Hisui. You see, we thought that hug pillows were the motive, but they were the means! Akika, you are the killer of anime!
The Reverse Thieves at Anime 3000 present the Speakeasy Podcast, uncovering the mysteries of anime and manga. Come visit us at thespeakeasypodcast.com.
Today I have some awesome guests on, as always. I've got Narutaki and Hisui from The Reverse Thieves.
Hey!
Hello!
I'm Narutaki, also known as Kate.
And I'm Alan, otherwise known as Hisui.
Would you guys rather have me refer to your real names or screen names fine?
Whatever, I don't care. Whatever you prefer.
Alrighty, because to be honest, I always forget your... When I say Hisui, I always forget. I'm sorry, man. It's just... I always think Narutaki is a boy's name and Hisui sounds like a girl's name.
That's what they are.
Okay. Because I'm like, from my American perspective, you're like, the gender bending of the internet kind of takes control. Anyway.
We actually try to confuse people, so.
Aha.
You're supposed to be confused.
You hear that, General Akbar? It's a trap! So, lame internet memes aside, we have a discussion of old, quote-unquote, anime versus new anime. And why do I say old with quotes? Well, because I find, and proceedingly so with this podcast, that every time I ask someone, what do you consider to be an old anime, I get a different answer. Some people say, oh, it's the black and white stuff from Tetsujin 28 and Mighty Atom or Astro Boy or whatever. And some people say, well, I consider anything, you know, past the 90s, or I can consider anything, or sorry, before the 90s, or I can consider anything before the 80s, you know. So I have to ask you guys, what do you consider to be old anime?
Well, I guess the way I usually define it, because sometimes we on the blog, we list things as like classic. And so I don't think I've ever listed anything after the 90s as classic. So I guess I would say before the 90s, personally.
Yeah. I, being the older one, anything 80s and before I consider now at this point in life classic, even though part of me in my heart doesn't consider anything before the 70s really old, because I grew up seeing the 80s stuff, so it doesn't seem old to me. But when I look back and I'm like, oh man, that's like 30 years ago.
That's a pretty long time.
So like, and this is where I have to ask, like, for me, and I'm sure I've already said this in my other segments of the podcast, but for your knowledge, I would consider things classic, things like Cowboy Bebop and Trigun, simply because why? Well, in America, we haven't really, I mean, that was kind of in the roots of anime fandom. You know what I'm saying? Like, when anime was brought over and became as close to the mainstream as it's ever been, those were some of the big names, were Cowboy Bebop and Trigun and FMA and all that sort of thing. So for me, I consider some select 90 shows being classic simply because they have such a prestige. On the other hand, though, I would have to agree with you, like, generally speaking, anything before the 90s for me is older anime. You know, so like Gatchaman and Space Captain Harlock and Yamato, Space Battleship there. You know, those sort of things I would definitely consider old. And Gundam is definitely in that genre of what I would call old anime. So with that in mind, are there any immediate differences besides, of course, art style and how things are animated that you see between old anime and new anime? Because I know one people can point off right off the bat, say, oh my goodness, Moe. Yeah, okay, you know, things have changed. I think Moe is the easy answer out, so I'm taking that away from you guys.
Well, I mean, there's the simple divide of how things are animated. I mean, anything modern, unless it is some crazy vanity special project, is, you know, done on computers. Whereas anything 80s is going to be cel-shaded, and stuff in the 90s can go either way. So definitely there is this divide of how things were animated.
I have one.
Okay.
Like, the idea of, I think certain character archetypes, and I'm excluding it, if I exclude Moe from that, like the otaku character, there were certainly some dips into that in the 90s, but, you know, like, these shows that are about otaku are very modern idea, very new concept for the most part.
I will counter you.
I didn't say all of it.
The prevalence, I feel that is, because...
That's what I said.
Oh.
Because I said that it was done before, but, like... That it's like happens a lot more now.
Oh yeah, I was just gonna say, like, everybody in Love, the Gang of Four, were each like an otaku in their own sense, but they were.
I think you can go back to even 80s stuff. I mean, come on, everyone knows that Bright from Gundam was definitely an otaku.
Hey. Slapping people otaku.
Yes.
Then everybody in Zeta Gundam was an otaku. Because they sure enjoyed punching each other.
Well, that's what happens when you have a girl name. Camille.
I was going to say, different genres being prevalent. Like, I feel like there aren't that many new genres, but how much of each genre came out was very different in the past than it is today.
Yeah, and like sci-fi, you know, was obviously way, way bigger in the past, and then, you know, comes and goes now.
Well, something I was going to say is, like, yeah, especially with the sci-fi thing, because I think it's a fair assumption that back in the day when a lot of those sci-fi space adventures came out, the space opera, that they were influenced by Star Wars and Star Trek, which had come out in the 70s. So it's almost like a full circle if you look at it, you know, from one perspective of, okay, you know, Star Wars influenced shows X, Y, and Z. Shows X, Y, and Z came and they kind of branched into their own anime, and then, boom, they come full circle. Now we're being influenced by the anime that was influenced by Star Wars. So I think now... What I'm trying to say, for time-wise in anime, things have kind of come full circle. Whereas back in the 80s or something, superheroes, or, well, I think it might have been 70s. I'm not quite sure on that, sorry. But, you know, superheroes, American comics, influenced what the Japanese did, and they kind of developed that. And now you can see with, like, Batman Gotham Knight and the Iron Man film that is getting done, the Wolverine, and some of the other animated films, that is also influencing what we're doing here with the original property. I think now, you know, we've kind of gotten both ends of the stick.
But I feel like, not that that isn't true, but I feel like it's always been the cycle of us kind of stealing from each other. There was this excellent panel that I went to at one convention, I can't remember which one.
I think it was Next, because I think I remember the panel I'm talking about.
Was the revolving door of Japanese culture.
Yeah.
And it was how, like, basically they had this panel of, like, really cool guys and how they did the panel was somebody would bring out one thing, like this show, you know, Star Trek influenced Yamato. Let's just say that. I don't remember if that's right. And then somebody would go, how Yamato influenced this show. And then they'd go, then this show influenced that show. And they, until they got up to the present, and then they'd go on to another show and show how just this show, like how there was this constant ping-ponging back and forth of shows influencing the other one. Like, The Matrix influenced this, which influenced that. And so, I mean, even in the 80s and the 90s, Trigun, Night Tao, freely admits all the American comics that he either borrowed ideas from or is influenced by. The writer of Kenshin, who I can't remember.
Nobu...
Watatsuki?
Yeah, Watatsuki.
Watatsuki constantly mentions how his character designs and character concepts are influenced by American comics. And I mean, any number of American comic artists nowadays will say, oh yeah, I read manga as well, and, you know, I've been influenced by certain manga storytelling techniques or character archetypes, and, you know, I've brought that into my own work while, you know, also looking at what they're doing in European comics and these independent comics. And I feel like any of the best creators are basically willing to put it vulgarly, steal from other sources, and kind of the best ones then take that inspiration and make something new and take some of their own original ideas and make something even
like fuse them together
into something greater.
You guys aren't trying to segue into the Nick Simmons thing, are you?
No.
Oh, okay, thank God. So,
the guy who stole Bleach, that guy.
Oh, okay.
No.
Gene Simmons' son. Yeah. So let's look at, in particular genres. I talked with some of the other people I interviewed here about Mecha, and actually it was Sean Russell and J.D. Banks from Anime 3000, about Mecha and how it's kind of, it has drastically changed throughout the ages. You know, you can look at stuff coming out now like Godanner and Gurren Lagann and Code Geass, which are relatively new, and look at Gundam, Mazinger, and I would say Shin Gatarobo. But, you know, that's, you know, the holy trinity of Mecha, you know, now, you know, compare and contrast. Yeah, there's some similar elements still there, especially with the Super Robo, because Super Robo almost always has a fiery, passionate pilot. That's always the theme, of course. But, I mean, you know, Mecha has changed a lot. Are there other genres that have remained somewhat prevalent that have changed a lot, kind of like Mecha have, or...
I mean, I think it's been talked to death, but shonen fighting has definitely changed over the years.
See, I don't see so many changes in shonen fighting. I mean, looking at Dragon Ball Z and Yu Yu Hakusho, and that's really as far as I can really claim to have read back for shonen
fighting. Well, like, okay, what about, I mean, things that came out in the 80s, Fist of the North Star, you know, how JoJo's Bizarre Adventure...
Yeah, but aren't those, like, actually seinen titles?
No. They ran... Fist of the North Star ran in Shonen Jump?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a Shonen Jump title. That's not a seinen title.
Yes, but I know they ran in Jump, but I thought, like, here in America, they were classified as seinen.
Nope.
No, and that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter in, hindsight, oh, that seems really seinen. The fact of the matter is that it was touted as shonen, it was aimed at young boys, it is a shonen title. I mean, even if it crosses genre... Now, that was where it was set. That was where it was positioned when it came out.
And even other countries. Like, if you go to anywhere in South America, and you go, hey, you guys, will you watch as kids? They'll be like, Fist of the North Star!
And Saint Seiya.
Yeah, and Saint Seiya! And they consider those, you know, kids shows. You go to Italy, you know, you run around the modern manga fans today. Would you watch as kids? they'll be like, oh yeah, everybody watched Saint Seiya and Fist of the North Stars. Those were all considered basically the same kid, like Dragon Ball Z in other countries. It's only in the United States that kind of missed the train on that and didn't see that as like this kid show to be watched.
And actually bringing up Saint Seiya, which, you know, goes on to influence a lot of character design after that. But I think it's interesting because I don't think you see as much of like the team, like the armored team shonen fighting series that were really prevalent in the 80s and then like in the 90s, like Samurai Troopers. I mean, just like this five-person team and then like the armor, and then they have like the transformation, like basically like Magical Girl but shonen fighting.
It was like a Sentai show almost.
Yeah, exactly. And so I don't think you really see that much anymore. Yeah. And then when I bring it up, I think that Magical Girl has changed a little bit. And it kind of like swings back and forth, like it's going to its roots. But then there's just a lot of this stuff. And you mentioned Mecha, so I won't talk about it very much. But just the fact that the people who were watching Mecha then have grown up, and now the Mecha shows are really, you know, kind of aimed at them in certain ways, and then not really targeting children anymore for a lot of these series, you know, makes a big difference.
Also, you know what? I think most people I've never seen talk a lot because we think too much about Shonen Jump for Shonen fighting, but I feel like nobody really examines the Shonen Sunday.
Hajime no Ippo or Inuyasha, those sort of things.
Yeah, because I feel like Shonen Jump is just so much more prevalent in both Japan and the United States that people kind of overlook, like Kakaishi or any of the other. Just like I feel like the Shonen Sunday formula is a little bit divergent, but we don't think about it as much here because... just because Shonen Sunday is so much less, has so much less inroad here.
Well, set, you know, to be, and for all intents and purposes, Shonen Sunday really does not exist here in America. I mean, yeah, it's got that website, but I mean, that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't really promote their titles, you know.
And everything else gets picked up by Viz or Del Rey, or you know. So here in America, it's not like they've got three or four big major. Well, let me choose my words carefully. It's not like Japan, where you've got three or four major publishing companies, like, you know, or magazines. Here, you know, you got one magazine, maybe two. Shoujo Beat is done, so only one, really. And everything else is pretty much in tankuban or graphic novel format. So, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of harder to market that here.
But I mean, Viz is owned by both parent companies. It's owned by Shueisha and Shogakukan. So it's interesting that they basically only push the Jump titles, and they only just really started to try to, like, the fact that we don't have Yankee-kun to Megane-chan. I always thought that was odd.
Liar's Game.
Yeah, the Liar's Game. We don't have Liar's Game, but we have Death Note.
I was going to say one other genre that I think has really changed over the years is kind of just shoujo in general, I think has really changed, especially from the 70s. I think, like, I would say 80% at least of shoujo that comes out now is school romance. And I don't feel that it's always been popular, but the bigger titles in earlier years were sports titles or very like epic historical titles, Rose of Versailles, Swan, are the things that I'm thinking of.
Aim for the Ace.
Yeah, there was a lot, I think, and there was like a lot of science fiction shoujo, there was a lot of fantasy shoujo, there was some diversity in there, whereas a lot of it now is like school romance. Pretty standard.
It's become very stagnant and self-cannibalizing. At least from my perspective, that's why I tend to stay away from shoujo, is because it's all, you know, if I want a school romance, well, okay, maybe I'll pick up and read a shoujo. I would love to read Kimi ni Todoke, after watching the anime. I love it. You know, it was awesome. But, like, I would not go for Vampire Knight or, you know, something like that. I mean, I'm not very knowledgeable in the shoujo.
I can definitely think of some wonderful exceptions that are licensed, but I'm just giving a generality that a lot of it now is very much kind of standard fare, unfortunately. So
with genres changing and some of them becoming even more stagnant is the word I used. Do you think that? I think I already know the answer to this. There has been a decrease in gateway drugs, I would say. Would you guys agree?
You mean like new shows that get new fans in? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, to kind of harvest some new... I mean, of course, anime fandom is always trading players. You know, the older guys go out as some newer kids come in, you know. But at the same time, I'm not seeing like some gateway drug that you can show your... like in my case, because I'm kind of younger, but my father or something, like, here, dad, watch this anime here, maybe you'll like it or something. Or, you know, show your friend or something, like, here, this is an anime, you know, try that. Pretty much you kind of have to already be accustomed to it or acquainted with it before a gateway drug comes in. I'm talking like, here, you plop this in their lap and they love it, you know. Do you see any shows like that? I don't see many anymore.
Well, I would pose the question of how many came out every year in the 90s that were like gateway. Like, I feel like there was a standard set of gateway anime in the 90s that everybody watched, and that was your gateway. And I'm not saying that I think that there's more now or less, but I can definitely think of shows in the last two seasons. Like, I can think of shows from last year, the year before that, that I think are great gateway shows.
And for, I think there's still new stuff for every type of person. I mean,
I would be like, oh, your dad wants to watch something? Show him Monster. Show him Black Lagoon. Oh, your friend wants something? Show him Gurren Lagann. Show him Eden of the East.
Show him Emma. You know,
your mom.
Mom, show her Emma or
Honey and Clover.
Hot Rocky Man.
Like, I feel like there is definitely stuff that you can use. I think that there is still good stuff because I feel that in the 90s there was just like, this was the set. This was like, they will like one of these six things. And if they like one of these six things, you've caught them. I mean, I think it's kind of similar.
And that's what I'm getting at, because, I mean, like, again, Trigun, Cowboy Bebop, and Evangelion were kind of the three that come to my mind. Like, you toss those out, somebody has to latch onto one of them.
Aww, normally. That makes me feel so much older.
I'm just saying, like, I mean, it you know, it did the trick for me. I mean, I didn't see Trigun properly as a kid, but watching some mysterious red-suited man walk around with broomstick hair with a gun and... he seemed to always have this light, carefree spirit, but yet at the same time, always knew what he was doing and never harmed anyone on purpose. You know, it was a little bit larger. It was way larger than life, but, you know, it reminded me of Rurouni Kenshin or something, you know, I had already seen. So, I mean, it was not that I guess I needed a gateway drug, but something that kind of was the next step in my fandom. You know, Cowboy Bebop was, you know, something like that, and Trigun was something like that, and Evangelion was something like that. So... you know, they all weren't necessarily gateway drugs to get me started, but they were, you know, there. Nowadays, I guess, like, you can't show something like Code Geass to someone, I don't think. I mean, maybe you could. I guess it would really depend on the person, and, you know, isn't that the case for everything? But, I mean, there's enough ecchi and, like, crazy Britannian Johnny Young Bosch action in there that I think it could definitely throw off someone... unless they were a younger fan.
Well, that's,
you know,
true,
what I mean?
But that's just one show. I can probably think of shows in the 90s that I sure as heck wouldn't show to anybody to try to tell them that anime wasn't, like... And also, I'm not sure that people don't like titties, so
yeah.
I'm all the time about to question that one.
But I'm about to say, how many kids, how many people got into watching anime... back in the day, because they'd be like, yo, son, check this out. I got this thing, Ninja Scroll. This lady has sex with a rock guy and it kills him. Or, oh shit, did you see that fight in the forest? You gotta see this.
Yeah, okay.
That was what I was thinking when I said gateway drug, because Ninja Scroll was my gateway drug. Because
I remember Daniel, my brother, bringing home stuff like, he'd bring home stuff like Ninja Scroll and Ranma One Half and Akira, and all of those had lots of sex, lots of violence.
Akira doesn't have lots of sex.
Well,
it has that
the
one
rape,
scene with a, yeah.
With the rape and the titties, and it all had this certain level
of
sexuality.
Mature and, like, maturity. Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say, how many people got into anime because of hentai? Like, I'm sorry, but that is absolutely true, especially in the 90s. But it was like, oh man, you gotta see this. It's like this tentacle rape porn that I have. It's crazy.
I only went on my experience, Kate.
No, I definitely agree. Not you say that, but I mean, like, to counter, yeah, I'm sure everyone with some form of red male blood in their veins likes boobies to some extent. But, I mean, for someone, say, for instance, your mother or your father, you know, like, he's a married man. If he gets caught watching boobies, you know, he's probably not going to become an anime fan the next time you say, hey, want to watch a show? He's like, the last one you made me watch got me in trouble with your mother.
I was about to say, what house do you grow up in? My dad's like, man, I like that VIP. The story is very bad, but that has lots of excellent boobs in it.
Okay, well, my house was not like that, Al, so I think it was just you. But, as I said, I feel like there's still some... Actually, Satan stuff is getting animated more often now, so I think that... Monster, just right there, Dad. You won't get in trouble for this, and it's psychological thriller.
Or something like, even something that's super fresh and out, like House of the Five Leaves.
Yeah.
I found more... for gateway drugs, the CGI stuff is a very easy transition, because a lot of people here have watched CGI movies and they've all been pretty good. Toy Story, one of my favorites. And then there's always been the crappier ones like Cars and Robots and Finding Nemo. You know, they're not great, but everyone's used to seeing CGI. And so when you come to some more grown-up CGI or whatever, the thing that comes to my mind was the 90s series based off Starship Troopers, the Roughnecks. I love that show. And even to this day, my mother and father, if they find like a stray DVD in like Best Buy or in Barnes & Noble or some random spot, they'll buy it because, you know, they remember the series and it's great. So things like Appleseed, you know, have been a very easy transition. Like, hey, this is CGI. Remember Ghost in the Shell? You thought that was kind of cool. Well, here, this is more up your alley. You know, they were able to watch it and say, yeah, that was a good movie. Or some of the live-action stuff, like the live-action Death Note film. You know, besides the length, everyone I showed it to has pretty much enjoyed it, who has not been acquainted with anime. You know, I find that those sort of things seem to be really, real easy sells when it comes to introducing fans.
Well, it depends. It all, like, if you want to get even the older fans, like, all the really successful Jose titles get turned into live-action series. Like, maybe, like, a good thing that I think might work for people is the Nodame Cantabile live-action, because it's kind of mundane. I mean, it's just at a music college, but you have these kind of introduction to the kind of anime humor, but still kind of grounded and not this otaku comedy, just this kind of general comedy. So some of the seinen and Jose series turned into live action might be good for drawing in a older crowd. and then kind of like trans, like, well, if you like that, but you want to see more of the story, then maybe you can watch the anime or read the manga.
I know for sure Monster would be a great hit for a lot of older people who aren't necessarily anime fans. I mean, I'm almost finished with the manga. I'm like 3/4 the way through it. And it, yeah, you know, watching the anime, I can definitely say, yeah, this would definitely be a good sell. Another one that came to mind, actually, surprising as this may be, was Sergeant Frog. And, like, they localized that so extremely well that, like, my little brothers will watch it, and they love just seeing a frog say, "Oh, you Pikaponians, I'm going to eat cow flesh!" You know, they laugh, "Oh, cow flesh, haha, he means like a hamburger." And, like, you know, my dad will laugh because they're making Indiana Jones references or something that little kids don't pick up on, but we're all laughing, you know? So I think something like that, if you have a more open viewership or audience or whatever, they like that. However, I can't think of anything that was older that was like Sergeant Frog, you know? I don't think the announce a bunch of pop culture references, you know, that genre really existed back then.
Well, I remember, well, this the always the localization of Samurai Pizza Cats where they changed a lot of stuff and they localized it a lot, and that was rather popular.
Aw, I miss Samurai. I want Samurai Pizza Cats.
So anyway, to get a little bit back on topic, so gateway drugs, yeah, they definitely changed, and whether or not they're more prevalent is arguable. Now, could that have something to do with the amount of shows that is being created? Like, I can definitely tell you that there's been, up till recent, a couple of years ago, more and more shows have been being produced each year, averagely. Do you think that has to do with, you know, what's good and what's not, or...
Wait a minute, you just mean in general?
Well, I mean, like, if you have 260 shows being produced a year versus 100 shows being produced a year, and, you know, given, do you think the number of shows has an effect on how good the shows tend to be?
I think that whether or not this is a good thing, I don't really have an answer for, but I think that the ratio or the percentage of good shows is probably the same. I mean, there's like totally off seasons where there's like not very much good stuff, but I think overall, like say in a year, there's probably the same average number of good shows. Some people would argue that if you're making more shows, there should be more good shows. Like the ratio should be higher. I don't know if that's actually possible because I don't know if there's enough talent in order to do that. Mm-hmm.
And recently the number of shows has drastically dropped.
Right. I think that's for the better, probably.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is they've been spending so much money on making so many shows that I think a lot of the other shows were suffering. That's my personal opinion anyway. You're spending too much money making otaku cannon fodder.
Well, I think there's just less money to go around.
That's true, you know, that's true.
Everybody's economy is bad right now, so I think, their funds are being more concentrated.
But were you going to bring up the 80s OAVs and the lie of the 80s OAV?
Well, I mean, it's easy enough to bring up, just that, like, once again, I think that there's plenty of bad stuff in every season, every era, every year, some total terrible stuff comes out, and, you know, the reason that we don't have OVAs very much anymore is thanks to that. You know, thanks to so much garbage being made that didn't sell, that cost extreme amounts of money. I mean, they are being more particular about their shows, and I think that's where there's more TV shows versus TV shows and OVAs.
Plus the fact that we see so much more of it now. Like, now, you can go out and almost everything gets subtitled. And you can see how bad almost everything is.
Well, not everything is bad. Right, but you can assess a season of anime from, like, if we just take fall 2009's anime lineup. I would say probably 85-90% of those shows, at least the first episode or two episodes, was subtitled. You can go and you can go online and you can download it or watch it streaming, whatever it is, and you can see for yourself and judge, this show is good, this show is bad, this show is mediocre. But in, you know, if we're going to take old, 1984, how many shows were you actually able to get your hands on and watch to assess 1984's lineup of anime? How many of those shows could you even watch now? Like, I seriously doubt that you would be able to watch anywhere near the percentage of the shows that came out in 1984 that you're able to watch in, say, 2004's lineup of anime. You could probably find, like, 80% of that.
That's 100% true, and I was about to say, I'm not sure if this, you know, like, this whole basis of the podcast is new versus old. Like, is the old stuff good, or the, you know, or is the new stuff sucking, or what have you, you know, that sort of thing. And I'm starting to think that maybe, this idea doesn't exist elsewhere besides America, because why? Well, American fandom didn't seriously start until, like, the 80s. And everything that was brought over was the best from Japan, typically speaking. So, we say old stuff, and for me anyway, being an American fan, older stuff, I already mentioned, you know, means the stuff that was kind of brought over here in America from the beginning. Whereas, now I'm comparing to the stuff that's coming, I mean, so, I guess what I'm trying to say, through all my rambling and mumbo-jumbo speech here, is that, yeah, they had all the shows all the time they got to see. So, you know, they saw the good and the bad, where we only saw pretty much all the good from the beginning, and now we can see all the bad now.
So, well, also, I think one of the major issues, especially in newer seasons, is, and you'll hear people talk about it, like, it's almost not the bad shows or the good shows. It's the mediocre shows, it's the average shows that are sort of bringing it down, because you're like, I don't care about this show. Like, whatever. It flows over you and it doesn't matter. And I think that the way that I kind of see it and describe it is, how many shows do you remember from 2009? Like, how many shows will you remember? How many shows do you even remember right now?
Actually,
Josh, how many do you remember?
Do I need to list them?
Yes.
Okay.
And you can't look at anything.
Okay, I'm not. My eyes are closed. Oi Bangaku, Tokyo Magnitude, Bakemonogatari, Inuyasha Final Act. What was that? Now I've completely blanked on the name. But I mean, that's four or five. So I guess
you've
made your point.
That's four or five out of how many shows came out last year?
Oh, Eden of the East. No, Ride Back came out the year before.
No, that came out in the winter last year. So that came out 2009.
Does that count? Okay, Ride Back.
Yeah, that counts.
Shangri-La, that even though that really sucked, you know, I'm thinking more of them as I really stop and think about it, but your point is made. You know, I only thought of four or five of them right off the bat.
And then
these were all shows that stuck out in your mind.
For either being bad or for being good. Like, things I remember from last year, Aki-Kan.
I love that show!
Tokyo Magnitude, Kimi ni, you know, those, that's like what I remember. And then, okay, so then take how many shows you remembered last year and then add 30 years to your memory. How many shows will you remember, you know, in 2039, how many 2009 shows will you remember? And I think that has a lot to do with nostalgia and just how, you know, how the human brain works about the past.
I think another thing I'll have to do with that, though, is what gets licensed. I mean, if you saw it subbed, or when it came out in Japan initially, and then it gets licensed here, and you bought it, I would guarantee you you're 100 times more likely to remember it than not. What that has to do with nostalgia, well, because I guess, you know, it's brought up more recently, it firms that older memory. But generally speaking, if it's brought over here, it has a purpose, and it's, you know, it has to meet like a certain bar. I mean, I think it's safe to say Sis X Kiss will probably never be brought over here, for many reasons. I think it's also safe to say What was that one with the panties? Chubra will never be brought over here. Or I pray that it will never be brought over here. But I'm just saying, you know, yeah, there's a lot of bad shows, but even some of the good shows will be forgotten because they're not licensed over here.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's like, it goes into the overlooked shows pile in 10 years, and you're like, do you remember when this came out? Like,
and then it appears on ANN as buried treasure.
Yeah.
So anyway, I guess to wrap it up, are there any shows old that you would definitely recommend newer fans seeing, and any shows that are new that you would recommend older fans seeing?
Licensed or unlicensed, or it doesn't matter.
Well, I've never tried to keep it legal. As long as it's not like, here's the torrent, I really don't care. So go ahead.
For something that is licensed and that people I think should really support.
Old or new?
Old.
Old, okay.
I was going to say Dirty Pair. Right Stuff just, you know, made every old-timer's wish come true by, you know, finally giving us the Dirty Pair license that ADV kept promising us that they would, but then they went out of business. And who knows if they would ever got a Section 23, but we got Dirty Pair TV. If anybody liked any of the Dirty Pair OEVs or liked the Girls with Guns genre, I feel like it was super cool and very good. Also old. Anybody is a Mecha fan or a Tomino fan or just want something that's Mecha but different, I really recommend Turn A Gundam. I really think that it had a bad reputation here in the United States, and a lot of people like poo-pooed Turn A Gundam, but I really feel that it is my favorite Gundam series. And I think that now that we've had some time away from it and people now don't expect Turn A Gundam to be like this continuation of the UC Spirit and can kind of see it as its own show, I really like it as, I just think it's a great series that just went overlooked.
You like it as its own entity.
Yeah. I really think it's the pinnacle of Tomino's career, in my opinion.
Really? That's, see, now those are fighting words right there. I'd argue that the original Gundam, because of course it was the founding block, but that's a whole entire podcast in and of itself. So what are some newer shows you would say, hey, old guys, watch this?
Other than
What is new? What is new? Like 2000 plus?
Yeah,
about that.
I'd say La Chevalière, I thought was really, it had action, intrigue, like great story.
Oh, Le Chevalier d'Eon?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say one of the best overlooked shows of the 2000s. Fantastic. And it was licensed here. It got a beautiful release. Nobody bought it. It was amazing. Great show. Great opening. Great animation. It's Production IG. They know what's going on. I mean, they're like absolutely my favorite, hands down. And it's just a story that surprises you in the end. I mean, I think it's been a long time since I was genuinely surprised by Revelations.
And to finish out my list of things and let Kate go.
I'm thinking, so you can just, you know, go ahead.
I also thought, just because I mentioned it before, and I'll go for like one licensed, one unlicensed, Hadaraki Man, just so different. So nothing else out there that I've seen like it. It's just about a working woman. It's just great, strong female characters. It was a seinen work, but it really feels Jose, especially since Anno's wife did the original manga. It's short. It's only 13 episodes, but it's just so different. It's so like a cure for, oh, I've seen this story before, but it's just about this lady working at a men's magazine, and it's just different, and it's just really solid, and it shows you just this kind of greater range of anime.
Okay, new shows for older fans. Planets or Planetes, whatever.
Yeah.
How do you even say that?
I thought
that?
It was Planets.
Planets.
Whatever.
I think it's one of those, like, it's just so rare to get hard sci-fi almost any time, and especially nowadays, like, hard sci-fi. And I think, you know, so many older fans really got brought in with sci-fi that they would obviously appreciate it. I mean, it's got this more human story to it than, like, space battles or anything, but I think it's just got this interesting kick to it that would really appeal to older fans. Akagi! Everybody should watch Akagi. New and old. But, I mean, technically it's a new show, but, like... What is there to say about Akagi except it's about crazy Mahjong?
And it's got Ivaro Rey as the crazy announcer.
That's right. I mean, it's like over the top. It's Akagi is like definitely one of the most badass men you will ever see. And I don't even know how to play Mahjong, and somehow it is like the most intense show ever.
Yeah, see, that was me with Hikaru no Go. I have no understanding of the game of Go, but I was still like, Did he win? Oh, he won! Awesome!
I also enjoyed some of... I haven't seen all of Hikaru... I mean, I think it's still going, but...
No, it ended. The manga ended.
It didn't have been... Okay, I've only seen a little bit of it, but yeah, I really enjoyed that as well. Okay, now, older shows for newer fans.
You gonna mention Legend?
What? Like, is that even fair? Everyone go watch Legend of the Galactic Heroes. It's only 110 episodes long.
That's a... That's a daunting task. For me, like, I look at 26 episodes and go, okay, so I'm in for, you know, a two-week haul here. And then yeah. I look at 50 episodes and say, I'm in for a two-month haul here. And then I look at 100 episodes and I say, maybe later.
I'm not watching
maybe,
that. Yeah, like,
maybe later.
Yeah, I mean, I think Legend of Galactic Heroes is one of the best anime ever made, ever. But I also wouldn't lightly recommend that, especially to fans now who don't really have, I don't think they really love and connect with that political sci-fi that is the essence of Legend of the Galactic Heroes.
Whereas you can sell anybody a dirty pair because Kay and Yuri kind of sell themselves.
Yeah, it's almost prostitution, but not. Older, God, this is hard. You can just cut out me trying to meander through all this.
Oh, don't worry. That's what I'm going to do right now with my bantering.
Okay.
I have an older show I'd like to recommend, and I'm fairly confident that people are semi-aware of this. Lupin the Third, Green Jacket, the first season that was directed with Miyazaki. Because if I remember correctly, he didn't do all the episodes. He did quite a few of them. But anyway, that series is like, to me, Japanese Scooby-Doo. I love it. At the end of every episode, Lupin pretty much gets what he was aiming to get in the beginning. Or Fujiko steals it or something. You know, it's the same kind of thing going on and on for every show, you know. But just like Scooby-Doo at the end, you know, the ending's always predictable. It's just how they get there. And it's always in a different setting, you know. And I think a lot of new fans, if they can get past the old, like, really choppy animation and some of the bad audio, or nowadays we would call it bad, you can find very lovable characters, a very addictive story, and, I mean, like, you have to be in the mood for it. You sit down and say, what do I want to watch? I want to watch some Lupin, man. You put Lupin on, and that's, you know, I would really recommend that to newer fans. And a newer show I would recommend to older fans, that's a tough one because I'm not sure if there are a lot. I mean, I'd have to say either Bakemonogatari or Tokyo Magnitude, because Tokyo Magnitude for me was one of the best shows of the year. And for me, Bakemonogatari was the best show of the year. So, I mean, I definitely would recommend those to somebody who says, well, new anime isn't good anymore. So,
it's actually interesting because I think it's a lot. I actually would say that I think it's a lot easier to get older fans to watch newer shows only because newer fans have such an aversion to character design that I think it really is a stumbling block, unfortunately. But, okay, I thought of one. Rose of Versailles, I would really recommend to newer fans. It's pinnacle. If you liked Utena, I mean, this is its roots. It's melodramatic. It's beautiful. And it's actually very well animated for 70s anime. Historically, we're recommending all historical stuff. La Chevalier. We're just obsessed with France, apparently, and cross-dressing. But, you know, it's like this pinnacle shoujo work that has got everything that you'd ever actually want in an anime. So
I was about to say, isn't France and cross-dressing kind of like the same topic? Anyway, I'm sorry. That was completely racist, and I'm not going to edit that out in any way. So thank you, Narutaki and Hisui, for coming on to my humble show.
It was a pleasure. Always. We've been doing more podcasting this month than we really should be, and like we're a blog.
That's true.
I got the push turning on them, so it's all good.
Okay.
Alrighty. Well, I don't know when this will be out, but again, besides Reverse Thieves and the Speakeasy podcast, which you can find at www.anime3000.com and is it RT or ReverseThieves.com?
ReverseThieves.com.
Okay, ReverseThieves.com. Go check them out. So besides that, are there any other things you would like to plug or upcoming events with the blog?
Well, since we don't know when this is coming out, I won't plug the Anablog tourney because we're up like this weekend. So.
Well, then I guess this is going to come out sometime before then.
Oh, well, that would be great. Then we'll have three podcasts up this week. Also, I mean, we just did a Detective Conan beginner's guide. I'm really excited about it, and that's all I really care about. So Conan, please go check it out. It's totally worth, you know, trying to start the series if you've ever thought about it. It's incredibly long, so it's kind of daunting, but we've tried to break it down enough for you to kind of start anywhere.
Well, we give you the movies to start with, so at least you can watch that and at least get a grasp of what this Conan phenomenon in Japan is.
So that's it.
Alrighty, and I'm assuming the same thing for you, Hisui.
Yep.
Well, thank you again for coming on, and have good luck with your blog there.
Alright, thanks a lot. It was a pleasure.
And that wraps up part one of Old versus New, Nostalgia versus Suckitude. I will have part two coming up really soon, and I mean really soon, because I promised a couple people that I will get certain parts out on time, so yeah, I might even release part one and two at the same time, so definitely look forward to part two. I hope you enjoyed the show. I know I sure did. Recording with all these fine people has been an awesome experience. I want to thank you all again for appearing on the show. And for part two, I don't want to tell you who is on because I myself don't know. I was going to do two separate parts and say, like, oh, here are all these people. But the thing is, 40-minute conversation apiece, you know, I got 7-odd podcasts or parts I pieced together to make a part of this grand podcast or what have you, you know? I mean, this is already a couple, you know, over an hour and a half long. That's it's a long podcast. So anyway, look forward to part two, and thank you for watching.
system. Sound system. From DJs. Sound system. Sound system. I don't acetates. Right? Sound system is also different versions that get played from our own disco, which we call sound system. Sound system. 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 System.